We'll go ahead for runway 13 and requesting a couple of turns for airward.
Number 6 Papa Kilo, altimeter 3005, advise 1 minute, jumpers away.
And then Hotel Bravo uniform, then direct to the airport, climb maintain 4000, 430 and 10, departure is 19-0, 2447.
Your First Coast Honda dealers proudly present the High Flyin' Show with Jack O'Brien and the Wiener. Show is brought to you by the Casa Marina Hotel and Restaurant, by Ascent Aviation, by Aircraft General Supply, by Angie Subs, by the Hidden Hills Golf Club, and by Hardball Creative. And now, live from the High Flying Studios, here's your host, Jack O'Brien, and the Wiener.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the High Flying Show. I said, welcome to the High Flying Show.
Good morning, Jack.
Yeah, cue him in.
We're trying to cue my man into playing the song I want. It's obviously a low
pretty
budget
casual,
operation
isn't
here.
It?
Yes.
He's awake now. Here we go.
Let's start with some Tom Petty as we learn how to fly.
Well, I started out down a dirty road. Started out all alone, and the sun went down as I crossed the hill, and the town lit up, the world got still. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. Well, the good old days may not return, and the rocks might melt, and the sea may burn. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. Thing.
All right, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the High Flying Show. And I am Jack O'Brien, along with my trusted hosts of the High Flying Show, my co-host Joel Wiener. The Wiener, good morning, Joel.
Good morning.
Great to have you with us this morning. Things been going well for you in the flying world, I presume?
Been flying all over the place.
Yeah? You could fade Tom Petty out. Now, we're doing some new instruction. Excuse me, Joel. We're doing some new instruction for our new engineer. We'll call him our chief engineer. Rob Mosio, is that how you pronounce your last name?
Works perfect for me,
No,
Jack.
No. Give me the correct pronunciation.
Mosio.
Mosio. Rob Mosio, welcome to the High Flying Show.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having
it's
me.
It's good
guys.
To have you with us. Now, Rob, we're going to roll into that other background music I told you about as I introduce our pilots in the room this morning.
Let's make it happen.
Let's do it. All right, let's start again here, Joel. Back to Joel Wiener.
Good morning,
Joel. Good morning to you, Joel. How you doing?
Man, things are well today.
Things have been going well in the world of flying.
Been good. The last 2 days, a little weather, a little chilly, but we're getting it done.
And across the table from Mr. Wiener is the head of flight operations at Ascent Aviation. Teaches all those flight instructors how to teach people how to fly. Good morning,
absolutely.
John Nafak.
Hey, good morning, Jack. I was out there early this morning at Hurlong at 6 a.m., and we're launching students already.
Well that's a good time to fly.
We did wait till daylight.
Yeah, but isn't the early morning time better, less wind, that kind of thing?
I think it's every day you got to look at it. Today's going to be a beautiful day. We've got an overcast, but it's going to be, I think it's up to 9,000, 10,000-foot overcast, light drizzle out there. That's the extent of it.
Right.
And the freezing level is 12,000 feet, which doesn't mean anything for general aviation.
Exactly.
Unless you're going high and
way up there. Beautiful day today.
One of the things about learning how to fly is you learn how to read what's called a METAR, which is a meteorological report, normally around a certain airport. Is that right? Would that be accurate?
Oh, absolutely. Every hour in the hour, most airports report in the current weather.
Yes. And when you're taxiing out or getting ready to go before you taxi, you hit this thing called the, help me with this, Joel, the, what's that called when we get the fast weather update?
The ATIS.
The ATIS. The Automated Terminal Information Service. There we
go. Which this morning at Craig Airport, winds are light out of the north.
Yes, yes.
10 miles viz.
Right.
Few at 4,100, scattered at 8,500, and broken 11,000. Temperature is 54 degrees. A little chilly this morning.
Yeah, it was.
Now, where does it say, tell you the freezing level?
You can go to Winds Aloft.
Okay.
And it'll give you the freezing level, and today is at 12,000 feet.
Okay.
And one final introduction here this morning. A couple of people are not with us, but I'd like to switch to the gentleman right across the table from me, former naval aviator, of course, and commercial airline pilot for Northwest Airlines for over 30 years, was it?
33 years.
Yeah, Garfield Benson. Welcome back to town, Gar.
Well, thank you. It was a nice summer in Minnesota, and I'm always glad to be back in Florida. I timed it perfectly. Wednesday, I left the 12th of October. Thursday morning, they had their first snow, and I'm the smartest guy there is in the world.
Man, speaking of snow, did you see what happened in Buffalo?
Buffalo, 6 feet of snow into some of those spots.
Did it go to six? I thought it was four, but I saw some pictures.
It's bad.
In fact, you could build an 80-foot snowman from all the snow that's in Rich Stadium.
Oh,
is that
sure.
Buffalo Stadium? Is that the name of the stadium?
Well, you know, the outdoor stadiums like Green Bay used to be in Minneapolis. St. Paul had an outdoor stadium. They would have aluminum chutes, and they'd have it up through the bleachers, and they'd hire guys to come in there and shovel the snow, and all the snow would go
down
to the lower
and go
river.
Into a truck, and they haul
it off. They haul it off. That's right.
Yeah.
When you got 4 to 6 feet of snow in a stadium, you haven't got enough shovelers, and you ain't got enough trucks. Plus, the trucks can't get around in that kind of weather, and they're dead.
Where are they going to take the snow anyhow?
Well, they have these big, huge things in Minnesota, in the metropolitan area, where they dump the snow in and melts it and goes into the river.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Especially around the airports. You know, there's a tremendous amount of snow that's that they shovel or
off,
they push
off the runways, off the parking lots.
Off there. And they take those by the dump trucks. They have high loaders, dump trucks, to an area where they have a grate. And they dump the snow in there, and it's heated, and it goes into the washes into the river.
Well, us Florida boys don't know a lot about
that. I know you guys don't know that. Yeah.
All right. Since 2014, this is now, I've calculated this. We started this show just shortly after I got my pilot's license in 2014. This is our 98th high-flying show.
Okay.
Man, we're almost there.
Almost there. Next year in 2023. This, by the way, is our final show of the year. I'm taking the rest of the year off, and you guys can now have the rest of the year off.
Well, we're going to be centurions.
Yeah, well, next year we'll be doing the high-flying show once again, and we should hit that magical 100th show number. The high-flying show is a radio hour devoted to aviation, from, like, the paper airplane to space travel, and most people know that if they've listened to the show before. There's a lot going on in the world of aviation. It is remarkable, ladies and gentlemen, that there is so much activity happening above ground. We pay enough attention to what's happening on dry land, but what's happening above the earth, not just 10,000 feet or 5,000 feet, but also hundreds and hundreds of thousands of miles away. So let's take a little walk through the Artemis 1 lunar mission launch. I want to share some notes about this with you guys and then have you comment as to what you think's going on here. But do you know that for the first time in a generation, NASA has built a human spacecraft for deep space missions that usher in a new era of space exploration. For example, a series of challenging missions awaits, starting with this new spacecraft, the Artemis 1, that will take us farther in a vehicle engineered for man-made travel than anywhere else in space, including Mars and, of course, the Moon. Now, the particular mission we're talking about is the Artemis mission, named after one of the largest constellations in the night sky and drawing from more than 50 years of spaceflight. Orion's deep space exploration missions, GAR, will put NASA and America in a position to unlock the mysteries of space. This was, by the way, the NASA initiative into space. The United States Space Force, which is a division of the Air Force, was initiated by the former president, Donald Trump, and is now getting it more and more into high gear with this particular moon mission. Now, this particular vehicle called the Orion. Are you familiar with that? Have you been following this at all?
I just got a glimpse of it. The new vehicle that they have, that they just launched, it's the biggest rocket they've ever sent up in space ever.
The space launch.
Oh, right. Correct.
It has more power than any other ones they've ever sent up. And this guy's going out to the moon. They're going to make five circles around the orbits around the moon that are going to back and splash in the Pacific. And I assume the next launch is going to be a man's launch around.
The second launch, the Artemis II, will have astronauts, two men, two women, on board the vehicle. The particular mission will not land them on the moon, but it will take them in orbit around the moon.
Right.
And that is scheduled for sometime in 2024. So it takes another couple of years to get that baby up and on the ground. But you mentioned the SLS, the Space Launch System, a mega rocket, supposedly the largest and biggest and baddest rocket propulsion ever built. Now, I want to talk about the money here. $23.8 billion for the SLS, the only rocket, according to NASA Administrator Bill Nelson, that can take humans to the moon. Now, that's 8.8 million pounds of thrust. It's the most powerful rocket ever built. But $28.3 billion just for that. Now we add the Orion space capsule, $20 billion. Now we are almost up to $50 billion on a mission that is just the first of three scheduled to go to the moon.
Well, I would like to go back to a comment you said just a few minutes ago when you said to delve out the secrets of outer space. Well, folks, I don't know if there are any secrets out there in outer space or not, and nobody does. But the fact remains is it's so far away from our solar system and so costly to do all that, I don't think the United States of America can afford, nor do we need to spend that kind of money to go out and find out what's there. It'll find us if there's anything, and I doubt very seriously if there is. But the fact remains we don't know, so it's always the fear of the unknown. Mm-hmm. And when you have a fear in the unknown, you're going to want to find out. But I think it's way too costly.
Well, a lot of people feel like you do, Gar. And, of course, there are many others that feel that you're wrong and that we should. You know how I feel about the money we're spending. I am not against space exploration, but I do think that we need to take the cart before the horse. We need to take the horse before the cart. They were all this time and money spent to go to Mars with these unmanned spacecrafts. They're still there. They're still flying around a planet with rocks and dirt, and there's nothing else there.
What did we find out?
And nothing so far.
Nothing for sure.
Absolutely nothing. No. And now the moon, at least, gives us an opportunity to set up a space camp, if you will, around the moon where they can go and come and do what they need to do, at least to take another small step towards space exploration.
I can buy onto that a little bit simply because of the fact that if you have a little town on the moon or something like that. It's military. If the Chinese are thinking about doing the same thing, well, you got to protect your airspace. You got to protect your solar system. And I think that's a good deal for us to be there first if we can do it and get ourselves established.
But, well, the final note on this Artemis thing is, yes, we're going to be circling the far side of the moon five or six times. As you know, China is there. They are already on the far side of the moon. We're going to take a peek at what they're doing. Because I think they're doing stuff that we need to know about. And China, by the way, is very aggressive into the space program that they have. We could spend an entire high-flying show talking about what China is doing in space, not just around the Earth with their new space station, but also at the moon and, of course, further out over in the Marsville area. So it's pretty interesting to me. I don't like the money being spent, but we... Honestly, we cannot just let China do what they're doing.
No.
And so we have to stay, we have to keep up with the Joneses, if you will. And America's always led in space exploration, and I don't think we're going to give that up at any time soon. It's 9:14. This is the High Flying Show. Many thanks to the First Coast Honda dealers for providing their support for the show. You guys have heard me talk about Victor's Payless. Victor's Payless is a store over on the west side of town. And if anybody in Radioland this morning is looking to purchase anything of value for their home, whether it's a mattress or a piece of furniture, a sofa, for example, and you have not elected to at least do your due diligence and check out what value and what price differences you'll pay for the same furniture at Victor's Payless, may we suggest here at the High Flying Show that you click on victorspayless.com and take a look. And if you just mention, you go to Victor's Payless and you go see Victor. Gar, if you did this, you say, Victor, I know Jack O'Brien and the High Flying Show. Victor's going to take real good care of you.
Oh, I thought you'd tell me with a nickel, I'd get a cup of coffee.
You get more than a cup of coffee out of Victor's Payless. I'm going to tell you that. But many thanks to Victor for sponsoring our show. 9:15, High Flying Show will return right after these words.
Speed kills.
He was shot out of a cannon.
But what kills speed?
Oh, I'm hurt.
That nagging injury.
Listen for the personal injury attorneys Farrah and Farrah Injury Update on 1010XL. Protecting you and your family since 1979.
Jacksonville.
Honda continues to impress with their new lineup this year. Don't settle for less when the best is just minutes away. We invite you to visit your local Honda dealer and see the vehicles everyone is talking about. Remember, only a Honda is a Honda. Come see us. We're dealing.
If you're a regular High Flying Show listener, then you know how much we like Aircraft General Supply, home of the Pilot Shop. The general store for all of your aircraft needs, located on St. John's Bluff on the Jacksonville South Side near Craig Field. Local pilots count on Aircraft General Supply for what they need and have been for over 20 years. No matter the part or the item you need, Aircraft General Supply most likely has it. Aircraft General Supply, St. John's Bluff, online at aircraftgeneralsupply.com.
Where's the longest cave system in the world? The answer in a moment.
There's always a good reason to compare homeowners' insurance rates. You may be paying too much. Protect your home with a Southern Oak insurance policy today.
Our family protecting yours, Southern Oak Insurance.
With over 400 miles meandering through three counties, Mammoth Cave National Park in Kentucky is the longest cave system in the world.
Southern Oak Insurance, our family protecting yours.
Fall temperatures are cooling things down and it feels great at the beach. The Casa Marina Hotel and Restaurant invites you to join them for their delicious Sunday brunch this morning. You won't find a better way to get your high-flying day going. It's also a good time to make your reservations for the upcoming Thanksgiving Day brunch next Thursday. Do that today, they will sell out. The brunch at the beach, that's famous for decades. The Casa Marina Hotel and Restaurant.
From aircraft rentals to aerial tours, Ascent Aviation continues to train aspiring new pilots at both of their facilities, Furlong Field and in Fernandina. If you're wanting to fly, contact Ascent Aviation today. Find them at a-scentaviation.com.
Mark Watson with Hardball Creative. What's better than beer? Cold beer. Put your company logo on a custom koozie. Check them out at hardballcreative.com.
Hardball Creative. Hardball does it all.
Attention golfers, Hidden Hills Golf Club has become an attractive destination for golfers all over North Florida. You too will enjoy our classic Arnold Palmer design that'll test your game and keep you coming back. Book a tee time today at HiddenHillsGC.com.
Hey, High Flying fans, did you know that Angie Subs has been a staple in the Jacksonville community for almost 40 years? You know why? Because Angie's loves the people of Jacksonville and the people of Jacksonville love us back. Everybody loves a Peruvian, but the next time you come in, I want you to try something different. The Dr. Bang. Dr. Bang is an Italian sub with ham and capicola, provolone cheese, and mayonnaise baked in the oven. Then we top it with our world-famous chicken salad. We sell a stupid amount of chicken salad. Angie's Subs, near the intersection of Beach Boulevard and Penman. Lunch and dinner. Where all the cars are.
This is the High Flyin' Show on 1010XL.
High Flyin' with Jack O'Brien and the Wiener.
This 1010XL 92.5 FM hour is powered by Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys. Call 1-800-747-3. That's 1-800-747-3733.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see
Artemis has made the moon. Now it's circling the moon as we speak. Are you aware of that?
I am.
The Artemis 1, the $50 billion mission that you and I are paying for.
So, Tuesday evening.
Yes.
It was actually.
It was Wednesday morning.
Yeah, Wednesday morning. I was in North Eleuthera in the Bahamas. And so I set my alarm to wake up at 1:04.
Yeah.
And look up, and then it was delayed for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But it finally launched, and I could see it.
You could?
I was watching it come right over the top of the Bahamas. And then when the two missiles come off the side, you could see them come off and fall.
Really?
In the glow and down into the ocean. It was really cool.
That's a big rocket, man.
It's a big rocket.
Wow, you could see it from the... Now, see, I forgot to get up. You know, I live on the beach. And I was going to get up and get on my balcony and watch it, but
it was a big ball in the sky.
It's a good thing you didn't, because you couldn't have seen it anyway. It was overcast.
Yeah, up here it was overcast. Yeah. Down there it was crystal clear.
You sure about that?
Yes, I am.
All right. All right, on the phone is Bob Kamm. We had a bad situation. Bob Kamm is a former air traffic controller, now a commercial pilot. He's an avid member of the High Flying Show. And Bob, good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Hey, Jack. Great. Hey, just a quick thing. You started the segment with little Frank Sinatra.
I did.
Yesterday at the FSU game, the Marching Chiefs played Fly Me to the Moon.
Well, isn't that something? And congratulations on another seminal victory.
Well, you know, I don't know what's going on over in Gainesville, and I'm not really upset about it, but that's a different story.
Well, Gators played well against South Carolina national champions or something, and they laid an egg yesterday in Nashville against Vanderbilt. Well, Vanderbilt beat them at home for the first time in 35 years.
That's crazy.
You know? Anyway.
On this air show thing you were talking about in Texas,
yeah.
I think everybody has seen the video. There's a lot of stuff that's going on. And most interestingly is, what happens next? What kind of investigation goes on in regards to something like that? Everybody's seen the video, obviously. And there are a lot of YouTube channels where people break down the situation and what's going on. But there's another side of it I want everybody to kind of keep their eye on, is what was the role of an air boss during an air show? So an air boss, like the one at NAS Jax where the Blue Angels were there, there's somebody there that monitors and handles the schedule during the show. It's like a day of wedding planner where they keep everybody on schedule. They're not air traffic controllers. They are certified, and they go through classes every year, and they sit down, they do all the paperwork ahead of their air show. They sit down with all the performers, they brief them, and then they sit there during the show and on the radio tell each performer, you come in at this time, okay, your time is up, get out, and bring the next performer in kind of situation. So the question that I want everybody to kind of keep in mind is, what if that air boss had any impact on the timing of the show? Was that part of it? Was it just the pilot lost his way and lost where he was on the airport? Or was there more to it? And I don't know the answer to that, but I always kind of like, well, I know what the process is for air bosses. It's very extensive. There's tons of briefings on it. I go into those briefings when you're at Oshkosh before every air show. So it's going to be interesting to see if or any the air boss had effect on whether or not those two aircraft were in that particular area at the same time, and were they doing what they should have been doing.
Well, I totally, Bob, Mr. Gar, I totally understand the job of the air boss and what he's supposed to do. But once the guy's in that airplane and if something happens and he is behind the eight ball, and I think this is what happened to the P-63 driver, the single engine airplane, is that there is a point of de-embarkation on the airfield probably right where the taxiways are. The show participants cannot cross that line because that's where fans are. That's where the people are watching it from. So they are denied any foot of airspace on the other side of that point. What happened was this P-63 guy got a little fast. He got a little got his turn going out a little farther, and he realized he's going to go across that line, and he steepened up his angle of bank to keep away from that line, and that's when he lost sight of the B-17, and he was pulling to keep away from that line, And then he unfortunately hit the B-17. My big question is, I want to know about, and they haven't said one word about this, and that is, why was everybody at the same altitude? The bombers are slower. The precip fighter planes are faster. They should have been separated a little bit.
You're absolutely 100% correct, and that is part of the conversation that, you know, is taking place and the interviews that are occurring. And where, if you're looking at we typically at Oshkosh separate different types by 200 feet, which is a ton in the air show world and plenty good. There's margins of buffers there. Why they were at the same altitude? Was that planned? Was that initiated by the pilots? Was that initiated by the air boss? What was briefed to the pilots? Were they audibled up? Weren't in fact the, you know, why were they on the same flight tracks, you know, essentially? Why, you know, these why questions, they fall on the organization and planning, and what role did the pilots have in that, and what role did the air boss have in the planning of that? And I think that's the interesting question, because if for whatever reason they misplanned this thing and set the cards up to where it was easy for somebody to lose their way and have something like this happen, well, that's not good.
Yeah. Well, the problem being is that all the, from what I got from it, all the airplanes flew the same track. And they'd come across the viewing area on the airfield to a certain point, and then they made a 9270 to come back to the field. And the multi-engine airplanes, the B-17, they're a lot slower. Their turn is a lot wider. And the single-engine guys on the warplanes, they can pull around there pretty tight. And so they're maybe overrunning these guys. I don't know. But there should have been an altitude restriction and separation between those types of aircraft, period.
Well, we'll find out. That's why I said, you know, as people, more information comes out down the road, the NTS puts out the preliminary report and then the final report. What was the role of every participant, including the air boss, in this process to put those aircraft in that area? And that's going to be the interesting part, because I like you, find it very interesting they were flying the same kind of ground track, and I find it very interesting they were kind of at the same altitude. So why was that, and was that planned? You know, a lot of this, Gar, though, is on the pilots. When they sit down and go, hey, we're going to brief it this way, are you guys good with that? The pilots all either raise their hand and go, nope, or yep, we're good to go with it. And as long as everybody knows what they're doing, you can do a lot of, you know, you can get them closer than my people might expect. And that's normal, too. And air traffic, you know, we'll sit there, and if I tell you, Gar, flying your 747, that the guy off your right wing is doing something, and he looks close, but you know exactly what he's doing, you're not necessarily too concerned, because everybody knows what everybody else is doing. It's the surprises that get everybody all excited, and I think this was a surprise by somebody. And why was that?
Well, you know as well as I do that any accident, one thing does not cause the problem. It's a multitude of actions by people or airplanes or incidents that cause the accident. It's just not one thing. So what's going to happen here is the NTSB's got this in tile, and the NTSB is going to do their investigation. Now, everybody says, what about the FAA? Well, they don't come in until after the NTSB is through. The NTSB does their job, then the FAA takes over, and they take part of their job, and that's when they do it. But the NTSB
actually,
rules.
Gar, it's somewhat backwards. The FAA has initial reporting on this, and then the NTSB comes in and takes over from the FAA and does all the action stuff, and the FAA just waits for the report. And if there's any air traffic thing, this goes for any accident, if there's any air traffic thing that contributed to that, well, then the FAA goes through a review process, and that's where you get new changes to the way air traffic controllers talk or perform stuff. There's all sorts of things that have changed the way air traffic is performed based on previous incidents. But it's the NTSB that will finally come in and say, I got it. And then the FAA goes, you got it like a dealer in Vegas.
That's right. They turn it loose. The NTSB's got charge. And that's where it is right now. The NTSB is in charge.
Well,
FAA doesn't do that investigation. And you know, the FAA just really isn't tasked. That's not their job. And, you know, there's no reason for them to do that. Their job is to separate airplanes and get you from A to B and do it without having any issues whatsoever.
Now, these weren't rookie pilots. There's six of them, I believe, that perished in this particular accident. Joel, what do you think happened?
Everybody that was at the command or in the cockpit, multiple thousands of hours, airline pilots. The gentleman in the left seat of the B-17 was a retired American. The gentleman in the P-63, active United captain. Thousands of hours, thousands or hundreds of different types of airplanes. And something went wrong somewhere. And
don't they practice together
prior? They practice and they talk. And briefings that I've attended in Oshkosh, Bob and I being on the airball side, we would go to briefings, and we brief 45 minutes for an hour and a half show of who's doing what, who's taking off, the staging areas. When you take off, you go over here and you stage until you're ready. And all that stuff is done hours before the show starts.
Yeah.
So,
and there's absolutely a altitude restriction. What altitude are you supposed to fly at? You're supposed to be at this. You're supposed to be at this altitude. What speed are you going to be at?
Right.
All this thing is talked about in brief, so everybody's on the same page. But if one little thing goes askew and then a multitude of mishaps.
And some of the YouTubers are going through that do the accident investigation. AOPA put one out. Bellagio put one out.
There's a real good one by an American Airlines captain.
That's the one I'm talking about. He does very good.
He does very good.
And he knows these guys personally.
Yep. Yes, he does.
So he got a little emotional in his
review. I watched several, but I think the American Airlines captain has got much more validity in what he said and how he described it.
Obviously, it was just an awful thing. We have air shows here every year, and so, you know, no one's immune from accidents, and this is a real terrible situation. The High Flying Show is extremely upset about the current of events that happened out there in Dallas, and I guess all the NTSBs and FAAs and everybody involved are going to try to figure out what it is. Bob, and thank you for calling in and checking out. Can you hang with us, Bob, for a few more minutes?
As long as I get to talk to Gar, I'll stay as long as it takes.
Well, that's very nice of you, Bob. Thank you. I'm glad I'm in the studio today, and you're on the phone instead of the other direction.
That's right. Normally, it's the other way around. It is 9:30. This is the High Flying Show. I am Jack O'Brien with Garfield Benson, John Nafak of Ascent Aviation, my former instructor and co-host Joel the Wiener, and now Robert Cam is on the phone. Where are you anyway?
I'm on the way to an airport to fly an airplane.
Where? Here in town?
Yeah, I'm out of St. Augustine this morning.
Oh, all right. The Air Force has a mysterious space plane that finally landed after spending 2.5 years in orbit. It is called the X-37B Orbital Test Vehicle. Are you familiar with this?
Don't know a thing about it.
I'll tell you all about it when we return. This is the High Flying Show. It is pretty cool.
This is the High Flying Show with Jack O'Brien and the Wiener. Today's show is brought to you by the Hidden Hills Golf Club and by your First Coast Honda dealers.
This 1010XL 92.5 FM hour is powered by Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys. Call 1-800-747-3. That's 1-800-747-3733.
You've been listening to the High Flying Show with Jack O'Brien and featuring Joel Wiener. Special thanks to Naval Aviator and...
We're back on the air with the High Flying Show. It's okay. Now and then we got, you know, a new board operator, chief engineer, and a guy that just still trying to work with the bozos in this room, starting with me, bozo number one.
Don't touch that button.
All right. Quickly, let's give away a Discovery flight from Ascent Aviation. Ascent Aviation's got two locations, one in Fernandina and one in Hurlong Field. The Discovery flight value is roughly $150. You'll fly the plane. You'll have a certified flight instructor sit next to you, and you'll have an opportunity to see exactly what it's like to fly a small airplane. If you'd like to win the Discovery flight, be the first to call, the very first. The first to call, Gar, at 641-1010. And Rob will take down your name, phone number, and email, and we'll get you a Discovery flight. And John Nafak at Ascent Aviation will get you up in the air. Isn't that right, John?
You'll take off and land the same day you come out.
And you'll also do a pre-flight, a little figure out what we do prior to flying those airplanes. A lot of fun. You'll sit in the PIC chair. That's the left seat. and you'll have a certified flight instructor right next.
If the conditions are good, we can talk the individual into taxi, takeoff, fly around Jacksonville, see Jacksonville from the air, which they may not have done ever, and then come back and land the airplane at the airport.
It's a great prize, and so we hope we've gotten somebody on the phone already and got a winner. I want to talk to Bob Cam briefly about what you just said, taxiing the airplane. Is Bob still on the phone? Oh, he's gone. John, let me ask you this. When you're teaching someone to taxi, when you get in an airplane, you're not using that yoke as a steering wheel. It feels like you should, but you don't. You steer in another way. Share with the listeners exactly what it's like to taxi a small plane.
It's pretty much like driving a go-kart. You know? So you drive with your feet. There's rudder pedals we use to drive the – if there's a steering mechanism in the airplane – there's a left foot pedal and a right foot pedal, and the left foot pedal will drive the nose wheel, which steers the airplane to the left. The right pedal drives it to the right. And there are planes without steering mechanisms, though, and in those airplanes you use brakes to differential braking to maneuver the airplane on the ground. Full castering nose wheels in those cases.
But I think it's one of the harder things that a new pilot has to learn.
Yeah, we drive cars every day, and we handle steering wheels, and I find myself wanting to use it when I turn off the taxiway on occasion. So it's difficult to get over, you know?
Yeah, but do you ever try to steer your car with your feet?
No, I haven't done that. Not at all yet.
What about you, Joel?
Yeah. My technique is I grew up on a farm, so it's like driving a bulldozer with your feet. You want to go right, you push the pedal, and that's how an airplane works.
Right.
And then there are some airplanes, the Cirrus, the your Light Sport, and the Grumman's. They don't have nose wheel steering, so you use brakes and or full rudder and give the airplanes a power, and the wind over the rudder will steer the airplane.
Really?
So that's...
Yeah, if you're multi-engine, you obviously could use differential power.
You add power to the left engine, and it turns it to the right.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, there's a couple of other things. How much time we got, Rob? 3 minutes. John, when you're coming in for a landing, another landing tip that I read recently and that Joel was on me quite a bit was when you were about to land that airplane, you look down the runway. What advantage does that give a small plane pilot when they're about to touch the wheels to the ground when they're looking down the runway, not down in front of the nose?
Well, I tell students basically when you come down on that stable approach, you're not going to land the airplane. You're going to level off just above the surface. And as you level off just above the surface, you should be looking down the runway to gauge your altitude management and to prevent you from landing prematurely. And then once you've accomplished that level off at about 1 foot or so, then you hold the nose up gradually as the airplane slows down gradually until contact occurs. And you have to be patient. You can't rush those landings. The airplane has to be set the proper attitude. And the proper landing attitude is the same thing as the takeoff attitude. Nose has to be up above the plane of the mains. Touch down the mains with the nose up, and you have good results every time.
Well, I flying an airplane isn't necessarily difficult once you take off and once you get in the air. Obviously, there's a million things surrounding you have to pay attention to. But the landing of an airplane, is that for your students one of the more difficult things they have to learn, or does that come in time pretty naturally?
It's the thing that produces the most anxiety in students, I think, because once you learn how to land, you know you've got it made at that point. I think half the effort is spent learning how to land, and the remainder is just meeting the FAA requirements for your certification. So it's a big thing, yes.
Well, the landing perspective is huge because if you can see the perspective when you're on the ground and be able to look down the runways as you take off even, and to keep that perspective in your mind a little bit, as you come into land and you pull that power off just before you flare, you can tell your picture in your mind will give you the perspective for where you were as you were taxiing, so you know generally what the area you were in. Flying several different airplanes and several different sizes between the military and stuff, I always did that before I took off. I always look down the runway to get that perspective.
One last note here. Excuse me, John. We're about to end up. The male pilots will now be allowed, and British Airways has approved this. Male pilots will be allowed to wear makeup, painted nails, and carry handbags.
Oh.
I'm not making this up. Female pilots will be asked to assist in the application of selecting the proper handbags and nail color. These pilots will be approved I'm not making any of this up, to wear high heels and kilts and to have their chests and back shaped. All of that from British Airways. What are we going to think of?
It's all made up.
I know. It's going down the way. Who knows?
For Garfield Benson, John Nafak, my co-host Joel Wiener, Robert Cam, who is on assignment, and Bill Stull. I'm Jack O'Brien. This has been the High Flying Show. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Adios, muchachos.